Kwantu on 702.
15 minutes after 10 o'clock, my guest is Khosi Nyalapilane, Khosi for the of the Bakhatla Bakhafela, and he's also the deputy president of Contralesa. Khosi, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I really, really appreciate your time and the honor of being able to speak to you.
Good evening, Aubrey, and your wonderful 702 listenership. Maybe I should start by correcting you.
Yes, sir.
Because you say my name wrongly. It's not Nyala. Nyala is an animal.
Right.
My name is Nyalala.
Nyalala. My sincere apologies, Khosi. My sincere apologies. Nyala is a buffalo, right?
It's not a buffalo, it's one of the antelopes.
And Nyalala means?
Nyalala means quietness.
Quietness.
It's a Kalanga name.
Nyalala. Khosi Nyalala Pilane. My absolute and sincere apologies, Khosi, for that, and thank you for the correction.
No, thank you very much for having me, Aubrey.
So tell us a little bit about the Bakhatla Bakhafela. Who are they?
Bakhatla Bakhafela is one of the Botswana community or tribe which stays in Moruleng, Northwest Province in South Africa. But there is also another sister tribe of Bakhatla Bakhafela, which is found in Mutshudi in Botswana. So we are one nation together, although we have been separated by the border. So there are section of Bakhatla Bakhafela in Moruleng and section of Bakhatla Bakhafela in Botswana. But there are many other sister tribes under Bakhatla. Still others are in Botswana, and others are in South Africa, and mostly in the Mpumalanga area. But they are all Bakhatla, and we are one community or one nation.
Even in the Mpumalanga area, yeah?
Yes, in Mpumalanga and even in Free State.
Wow.
We all come from one lineage, you know? That is why some people would say Africans are just one people.
Yes. So would I be correct in saying that I am speaking here, when I speak of Bakhatla Bakhafela, I'm speaking here of one of the ethnic groups within the greater Botswana nation?
That is correct. That is correct.
Break it down for me, Khosi, because, you know, sometimes, let me tell you, one of the things that I was educated about, for example, the Tsonga people, that the Tsonga people, for lack of better descriptions, are like an empire made up of various different groups. And amongst those groups are the Shangaan. And the Shangaan don't necessarily mean that they are all Tsonga. They are all part of the Tsonga empire, but the Shangaan are a group within the Tsonga group. There are others, the Tonga and so forth. That for me was quite a revelation. Explain to me how of the Botswana peoples, where does the Bakhatla Bakhafela emerge? How do they emerge as a standalone group within the Greater Botswana group? And do I call it the Greater Botswana Empire? How do I speak of this phenomenon?
Well, I think Greater Botswana for now will be fine.
Yeah.
And as you rightly said earlier on, it's just a different dialect that broke away from the main Botswana, which was Bahurutsi. And within Bahurutsi, there are different dialects or different communities within Bahurutsi. And then they become Baroro and Bakwena and Bapo and Bakhatla. There are many lineages, but all these happened when they were these battles, and that eventually ended up cutting and separating people who necessarily be from one lineage.
So
this is how we eventually became this.
What you're saying to me is that there were factions that would have broken away from a central sort of original group that broke for many different reasons, but different factions broke away and they then represented the various ethnic groups within the greater Botswana nation?
Exactly. And this happened across all the African nations. That is why in Eastern Cape, for instance, you find many, more than six or seven kings, but they are all from one lineage.
Yeah.
So that happened with all other African communities.
Sure.
So very
interesting, Khosi, that you say that as an aside, I suppose, is that whenever we speak of Africa and the peoples of Africa, sometimes we fall into an over-romanticization of our pre-colonial realities, almost as if we didn't have our own disagreements that created the current realities. Comment on that?
Yes, I think you are quite right. Although some of these were deliberately exacerbated by the colonizers, because they would always identify a small entry point which could be disagreement, and they would ensure that they create that bridge and so that they weaken up these ethnic communities.
But there were points of skirmishes that were our own and our own alone.
Of course, like any other family, there will always be difference.
Yeah. I think that's important, Khosi, because I sometimes worry about the way that we tell the African story. In that we sometimes, as I said, over-angelicize ourselves in the way that we speak, such that we don't get a full understanding of why we are the way we are now.
Yeah.
And it then leads me to the question that I want to ask you now, as it pertains specifically to the Bakhatla Bakhafela. How do they emerge? What were the reasons that created the emergence of Bakhatla Bakhafela from which central ethnic group? You spoke of the Bahurutsi. Who were they? How do they start? Where do they come from?
Within each and every ethnic community or grouping, they would sometimes separate because they were somehow dependent on farming and in particular grazing. And this would lead them to sometimes go far apart, and some where used to be would then another settlement which the others would not necessarily want to find. And when they multiply, they eventually become sort of another ethnic community.
Sure.
And they would then find something that can sort of unify or unite them, like a totem, which sometimes they would then highlight something that happened.
Yes.
Which records history for them, or which assisted them to survive, and they would then name themselves and take that as a totem, and hence different totems within these ethnic communities.
And as far as the Bakhatla Bakhafela, what happened?
Well, as far as Bakhatla Bakhafela, we were one Bakhatla the Hammanskraal area towards the Limpopo.
Yeah.
And there was one leader, which was Khosi Matsego, who had two sons in one family. No, who had a son and a daughter, two children, and the eldest was a woman, and the younger brother was the son was the youngest to the sister. So when the father passed on, the community started to divide there. There was one, Kafela was the youngest. And
the boy.
The boy.
Yeah.
And the sister was, come again, at Haman's Kraal. It was Museta.
Right. Right.
So then the two siblings had to part ways, because at that time, the community of Bakata felt that they could not be led by Museta. They were too patriarchal. And hence, when the other group was feeling that they could be led by Museta, who was the elder sister, the others felt that they couldn't be led by under Museta, and they decided to separate, and Kafela had to lead them. And they parted ways peacefully, because it was not a matter of fighting, but just a difference of those thoughts.
Is the group Is the group that was led by King Maseta?
Museta.
Do they still exist?
Yeah, they are the Bakata Ba Museta at Makapan.
Okay.
In
So the Bakata Bakafela are mostly in the Hammanskraal area, as you say?
No, Bamuseta.
Oh, Bakamuseta are in the Hammanskraal area, as you say.
In the Hammanskraal area, yes.
And then Baka Kafela?
Moved on towards where eventually they landed in settled in Pilanesberg. They also kept on parting ways, because there were other two brothers who were younger to Kafela, but they were from other houses, because remember we always had one or two or more than one house.
Sure.
So there was Kau and Mocha, and along the way Kafela left with his younger brothers or step brothers. Or half brothers, and the half brothers also then parted with Kafela on the way, and then we had Bakata Ba Makau and Bakata Ba Mucha.
What makes Bakata Bakata?
Bakata is what they eventually decided to become after they parted from their original lineage, which was
Bafuruti. I suppose the question needs to be made a little more sophisticated. Are there specific rituals, identifying practices that make Bakata different to Bahurutse, to Barolong?
Yes, definitely. There are, and especially when you look at their totem, because the totem is the one that differentiates between all these ethnic communities. So
what is the totem of Bakata?
The totem of Bakata is a kabu.
Babina kabu. Or Leana kabu.
Leana kabu.
Well, you know how I know I sound clever, né? it's because of a very good listener friend of mine by the name of Dikele Diwaga Malebia. She just wrote to me now. She says, that's my Khosi right there. Probably Mukata Re Anakabo. So I sound like I know stuff, but no.
Yeah.
I don't, Khosi.
Malebia is definitely Mukata, but Bamuseta.
Bakamuseta. My guest is Khosi Nyalala Pilane. And we're getting to know the Bakata Ba Kafela. Tell me the story of the totem of Kabo. Is that also the totem of the Bakata Ba Kafela?
Yes, it's the totem of Bakata Ba Kafela. Actually, all the Bakatas.
All the Bakatas. What is that? What is Kabo?
Kabo is it's a bearded monkey.
The what? Sorry,
a bearded monkey.
Oh, the bearded monkey. Yes, yes, yes. Beautiful little animal. Very intelligent animal. Yeah?
Yeah. Very, very intelligent. And normally, how they choose to take it as a totem or adopt it as a totem is because it has played a role in their survival.
Mm.
So the story says they were about to be attacked by the enemies, and Kabo alerted them, and that's how they survived. And eventually, they felt they should now use it as their totem.
Talk to me, Kosi, about the phenomenon of totems. You started off in the beginning of our conversation, and let me perhaps advance my understanding and then correct me if I'm wrong. Educate me and help me. You will see amongst the tribes of the Europeans that they will have what they call crests, a particular design on a badge that represents themselves. So, for example, you'll see amongst the English, they have the triple lion sort of a crest or badge representing
sometimes call it logo.
Logo, nice. Representing, of course, the faith that they believe themselves to be the protectors of, the faith of the lion of the tribe of Judah and so forth and so forth, and the triple lion. And there's of course, all sorts of stories connected to that and many others. And you see it in many, many different cultures. Would the totem have similar branding reasons? Talk to me about the totem. Yeah,
not quite. Often, I think that is something different to us.
Yeah,
because with us, it's not necessarily more of a religious belief, but the fact that this particular totem or animal has played a role in surviving us, in making us to survive. And hence we felt it's something that we could always respect, not necessarily to say it becomes now part of the religion.
But it does play an identifying role of a particular people?
That is the purpose of that. It plays an identifying role of your being as this ethnic community or grouping.
My understanding is that particular grouping, so for example, the Bakhatla will not, for example, eat a kabo.
Yes, you will not eat a kabo because naturally it's something that we don't eat. But there are other ethnic communities or groupings that have totems of animals that we are eating, and they also eat those. For instance, others like Barolong, their totem is Tolo, Baana Tolo. A Tolo is a kudu.
Yes.
And it's something that we eat here. Yeah?
Would they specifically, that particular ethnic group that is identified by that specific totem, would they eat the Tolo?
Yes, I haven't seen some who really don't eat all of them.
The reason why I asked this, Kosi, is that I can't remember who I had the conversation with, was that those that would perhaps Ba Ana Tantagane, so for example, my maternal side, Babedi, Babina Tantagane. And I was led to understand that the Bakoni
will not, for example, indulge or eat tlantlagana, that specific sparrow, that, for example, babina puti, those that use the impala or some sort of buck, will not eat. Is there some sort of theological, cultural explanation for that reality?
Well, I think some of these things in our culture were naturally the protection of these animals.
Yeah.
Because there are those animals that needed to be protected, especially where they were not found in abundance. And those will always be preserved. And it's not only the animals, even the trees. There were trees that sure. were not supposed to be cut. So people sometimes may exaggerate these things, but in reality, those that are normally consumed or eaten are eaten, except those that are not eaten, of course, in terms of what we know in South Africa. For instance, in South Africa, you would not eat a baboon, whereas in other areas in Africa, like in the DRC, you find them eating baboon. And even this similar ape or beaked monkey.
Yes.
There are areas where they are eating, but not in South Africa. And I think it's just that kind of understanding of people knowing that this can be eaten in this area, and whereas in other areas are not eaten.
So Z-Max asked me, please ask the Khosi why he has a Kalanga name, Nyalala.
Africans have always been traveling all over, even before colonial came here. Our area was one of the economic areas, so they met, they interacted, and probably the parents felt that name could be liked.
Sure.
But it is also in our own language.
Yeah.
It calls for quietness. So it's not much used, of course, in the area.
Yeah, I've heard sometimes people, whenever there's a fight and tempers are flaring, people will say, Jalala.
That one is T-I, not N-Y.
Yeah. No. What I'm saying is that there's that sort of connection and derivative of the languages that are connecting. So I'm recognizing that, like peace, calm down, gentlemen and ladies, and whatever the case may be.
Absolutely.
The social structure, and I'm going to ask this question sort of very carefully, Khosi. The monarchical approach to the Botswana versus, for example, the Nguni sort of ethnic groups. You'll see that I don't like the term tribe. It has certain implications. Anyway, but there seems to be a different sort of order, structure, levels of allegiance amongst the Botswana and maybe even the Basotho and maybe even the Bapedi, let me say the Sotho-speaking peoples versus the Nguni-speaking people, the structures of monarchy seem to be slightly different. Would you agree?
Yes, but all comes from the colonialism and apartheid era. And the reason for that is, during the apartheid, there were only four provinces, which was Transvaal, Free State, Natal, and Cape. Now, in Transvaal and Free State, the two were under the Boers, and Natal and Cape were under the English, the Britain. Now, the Boers did not want to recognize the kingship and the leadership properly, whereas in Natal and Cape, because they were under the leadership of the king. They were somehow not too harsh to the kingship, although they did not want it to be at the level of their own king or queen, but they still understood that. But with the Boers, they completely wanted to do away with it, and hence there was not that much cohesion amongst the people who were staying in Free State and Transvaal. That's my understanding.
Let me push back a little bit, Khosi, if you don't mind. Prior to the advent of colonialists, the white man, Shaka was a paramount king. He was an emperor. Even before him, of the different groups, the Mthethwa, they had paramount kings. I suppose what I'm suggesting is that the monarchical structures of the Nguni, and I'm speaking here specifically of the Zulu, but there are many others, seem to have a more defined structure of a paramount chief, a paramount king, a paramount leader. Later on, we see with Mzilikazi, we see it with Soshangani, we see it amongst those groupings. Outside of the influence of colonialism, or let me say white power. But I see that amongst the Botswana, for example, we don't have a king prior to the colonial era that we can point to. And this is where I need your help. Is there a king? Is there a specific king that starts the Botswana dynasty that we can look to, from whence then you have these breakaway factions for whatever reasons?
Yeah, normally the paramount or the senior one would be the one who all broke away from, and they would still adhere to that one. But if the coming government start to disintegrate that kind of lineage, it ended up being all for himself.
So who was the Botswana senior king?
Like I said, we all came from Bafuruchi.
And they came from where?
It was Botswana. And we can name a lot of them down once, but then even when these ethnic groupings started to move away, they still had their own paramount or their own king. But along the way, it faded because the government of the day did not recognize those seniority.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the Bakhatla, Bakhafela and Romance. Here is a young man who sees a young lady, falls in love. What is the process? Are there set processes for the courtship process? How does it work?
I guess we're not that much different. Of course, in our case, there were other practices that we were not doing, which were practiced in other areas like the Gunis. But a boy would always inform the parents. But firstly, initially, it was the parents who would go and identify a lady for a boy. And it would always be somebody who they are familiar with, and they know the family very well, because they wanted to ensure that whatever they have taught to this young man continues, and the lineage of that family is well kept.
So it was very much a situation where, and of course we see this all across the world in many, many societies, but the idea would be that the parents find a wife for a young man.
Absolutely.
Are there instances where the young man would go it alone and say, no, I like this one, not that one?
Well, these are the new phenomena or practices. Initially, that would not be an issue because we are taught to understand that your parents are always looking best for you. But with all these movements and interactions, all those practices, unfortunately, fell off. And today, a man or a boy would say, no, I have seen this side, not that side. But previously or before, you wouldn't do that because you shall not even have known many other people except the ones that your family have been interacting with.
Does that continue in some instances, in some areas, in some spaces? Does the choosing of a wife for a young man still continue in the way that it happened in older times, in more ancient times?
No, not that I know of. It could be done strategically, but not openly like it used to be. Yeah.
Give me a sense of dates, Khosi, of the emergence of the Bakgatla ba Kgafela. Is there a sense this is when we could say around circa 18 such, 17 such, 16 such?
Well, around 1600, that's when Bakgatla ba Kgafela emerged.
So yourself as Khosi of the Bakgatla, are you a king of the Bakgatla? What would your status be amongst the Bakgatla people?
Well, because the kingship has not been practiced, it's just a Khosi. Because to be a king, you have to have other many Khosi under you. But in our case, it's not that way. The person who could be the king, like I said, we broke away from Moseka, would be the king of Bakgatla if that comes back.
But she would be a queen then, yeah?
Now, today, they are also practicing the same practice that they said they would not necessarily agree to. So it's not a queen, it's a king now. It's a male descendant.
But wasn't Masetla the older sister of
Moseka then, but I thought you mean now.
Yes. So I suppose two questions here. Does the Bakgatla recognize a woman leader? Would that be something that would be recognized if it were to happen?
Well, I think with the current situation where the constitution insists that women are also liable to that or eligible to that, we would definitely go there.
Remember, let's forget the constitution for a moment. Let's look at the Bakgatla and their mores, their morals.
No, they wouldn't if it was not of the changes of the constitution.
Which would that have been part of the reason why Masetla, the original dot, is that why she would have been shunned as a leader?
Yes.
Amongst the Botswana people generally, is there an acceptance of woman leadership?
Not that I know of previously, except if changes happen now, because currently that is happening, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
But previously it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was patriarchal.
Disputes. How do the Bakgatla ba Kgafela deal with disputes? I borrowed money from Khosi Nyalala Pilane, and I'm unable to pay him. I know that I could probably go to the small claims court in terms of the civil law. But amongst the Bakgatla ba Kgafela's own institutional ways of dealing with disputes, how does that work?
Well, in our culture, we will ensure that the one who has been disadvantaged is brought to the same level that he was when settlement is done.
And would that be done by elders? How would that legal process work, traditionally speaking?
That is done at the quota. Quota is like a parliament, because in our case, the leadership of our communities within quota, they also serve as judiciary.
And of course, would that be an elected group of people, or would that be just elders of the Lokotla who are respected elders in the community?
Yes, there would be some from the royal family, but others would just come as per their knowledge and their standing in the community. If they've got good standing within the community, they would always be part of that, because it was not necessarily a permanent job. It depends on as and when. That is why it is done in an open, and everybody can come and attend. And people will then, those who are best with what would be the dispute, will always be consulted.
The issue of the royal family. Is there a royal family amongst the Bakata Bakafela that is above other families that are part of the royal court, or how is royalty established and legitimized amongst the Bakata Bakafela?
There's a level of seniority within the royal family. Obviously, those from the first house or those who were born first within the same lineage would be the seniors, and just like that as they follow.
And which is the family that would be recognized as the family that represents Bakata Bakafela in that sense?
Absolutely.
Which one is it? Which family is there a specific family that we...
In Muruleng, we have three senior families or houses.
Yes.
Of our great grandfather Kosi Pilani, and these are all under Pilani family, and they are Kamanyani family, Somankani, and Mantris. These are the three senior families. Although there are other lower families who add to that, but the key ones are these three ones.
And they would play largely ceremonial roles, marriages. What sort of situations, rituals, moments do we see them? And I suppose I'm thinking now about, for example, the Nguni, where kings would. But is there some sort of a homage paid to them in the form of a tax, or how does it all work?
Yes, in our case, there was a tax which was called the kafela, and these were proceeds that people got from farming, either a crop or animal, and that would be brought to the royal house or the
yes.
royal family.
Yes,
and they are not necessarily for the sole use of the royal family, but that's where the storage would be, so that when there are calamities or a need for some of the community members, then the royal family could assist or intervene in that.
Does this continue in one way or the other in modern times?
Yes, there are those that are still practicing and are loyal to that, but It is somehow faded because of these interceptions of various political leadership.
I come from Mamelodi, Khosi, and we talk about Hohafa, when you pay.
Yeah.
Is that where it comes from?
when we talk of the Kafela.
Yes.
I don't know where.
Tsamo khafa so and so. Tsamo khafa di biri tse re lo dinwang so.
Yeah, I can't vouch for your language in Mamelodi, but for us, yes, it's the Kafela was meant.
I'm very interested in the development of language. I discovered very, very recently that in Mamelodi we talk about Hokazata. Right, that's when mm-hmm. we put money together to be able to buy yeah. money, and I discovered that it comes from a Muslim word that signifies or has a similar meaning. I think it's kuzat or something, and that's where it came from. So I listened to you'll hear guys will say bo when they give somebody something and they receive something, they say bo. And somebody said, "No, it comes from the French word mbo, which means good." And then somebody said, "Now I'm hearing khafel. I'm thinking, oh, maybe that's where khafa comes from. Not khafa as in mad, but as in paying. Maybe that comes from there.
Maybe could be. I don't know. But what I know is we are talking of khafela.
Yes." Lekhetonyana, some sort of tithe. Amongst the Ngunis, or specifically the Swati, there is a thing that they call inwala, where the first fruits of the farming activities of the people will then be taken into the storehouse of the royal family. And it's a big, 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 big ceremony. So it sounds like it's something similar to that?
Yeah, it's the first fruit, of course, yes. Yeah. Contribution of the first fruit.
Yeah.
But like I was saying, it would be used for when there are bad times and people sure. need some assistance, and that would be used for that.
As we close, Khosi Nyala Pilane, I've been to Pilanesberg. Nature reserve, beautiful part of the world, you know, as you come out of Sun City and you've been...
yeah?
What is the plan amongst the Pilane people, the Bakhatla Bakhafela, for the Pilansberg, the economy that's connected to your heritage and so forth?
Yes, our plan basically, Aubrey, is to really ensure that we utilize what we have. And normally we would think of the leadership, we would think of the people, we would think of the land. Now, all these need to be evaluated as to whether they could be some benefit or potential which can be used for the development and sustenance of our people as a nation or as a community.
Mm-hmm.
So in our case, we have developed a long-term socio-economic development master plan, which focuses on the potential of the land that we occupy.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it's something that we sometimes miss out, because we always want to get things from outside before we even utilize the ones that we have to its potential. So we focus on that, and out of that, we managed to develop a long-term master plan, which is focusing mostly on four economic pillars, being mining, tourism, agriculture, and manufacturing or industrialization. And all these pillars is because the land can provide. You have just said the tourism, so it's part of that. Mining, you know, our area is vested with mining activities. And agriculture is our life. We just need to improve on it. And manufacturing, there are factories that were abandoned or left out, which used to be very effective during the former dictatorial regime. So these are the things that we feel we need to focus on. And for my sake, this is just a pilot for to create a solution for all rural communities, because we think what we have might also be found in other areas. If you see all the rural areas, mining are happening in rural communities.
Yeah.
Tourism is happening in rural communities. agriculture is in. So why can't what we use here, if it works, can be translocated to other communities so that we eventually can start our own economies within our own boundaries?
Jose Nyala Lapilan, what is your favorite bakhatla bakhafela food?
Ding le
chotlo. Ding would be the sorghum based mealy. Not mealy pap. No, mealies. But it would be the sorghum based porridge, right?
Yeah, or pap.
Yeah. Then, of course, chotlo would be the meat that is cooked for a very, very long time until it's completely, completely tender, right?
Yeah, it's like shredded.
Yes, yes. Now I remember eating chotlo and ding out in the Mamelodi area. I had a girlfriend many years when I was much younger. When Akosi, she was a mokhatla as well. She used to like to say, "Hey, wena obri umakhakha waitsi." What does that mean?
Yeah, umakhakha. You are nasty and naughty.
Kosi Nyala Lapilane, I want to thank
you. I can hear from your language that you are indeed like that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Kosi Nyala Lapilane, thank you so much. I really appreciate you talking to me.
It's always a pleasure.
Much appreciated. Kosi Nyala Lapilane, Kosi of the Bakhatla Bakhafela.